This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It is a marketing communication, is not for onward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise. Past performance does not predict future returns, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only. References made to individual securities do not constitute a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold any security, investment strategy, or market sector, and should not be assumed to be profitable. Janus Henderson Investors, its affiliated advisor, or its employees may have a position in the securities mentioned. Hello, and welcome to Your Biggest Investment, a podcast mini-series from Janus Henderson Investors, exploring how the financial decisions you make today can help you build the future you want for your children. Throughout the series, we'll be speaking to parents about some of the common financial challenges they have faced and how they've gone about resolving them. In this second episode, we're going to speak to parents Rebecca and Steve to find out how they've gone about planning and investing to provide for their children, as well as for the life they want once they retire. We're also going to speak to a financial advisor, Felix Milton, from Philip J. Milton & Company, to get his take on the best approach to balancing your own financial future with the needs of your family. Rebecca, Steve and Felix, welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Hello.
Rebecca, let's start with a little bit about you guys. So do you want to tell us a bit about your work and where you met and when you married?
Yep. So Steve and I met at the hospital ball. He was a junior doctor and I was a newly qualified nurse. And we dated for a few years and I think got married...
2009.
So 8 years after meeting.
Okay. And you had some children, obviously. Do you want to tell us a little bit about when they turned up?
We had twins in 2006 and then we got married in 2009. And then we had a third child in 2010. I had to think about that one.
And what activities do they enjoy?
Oh, a whole range. So I've got one child that loves football, one that loves horses, and one that loves looking at herself in the mirror.
Okay, then. And Steve, let's go over to you. When did you start thinking, okay, they're going to cost us a little bit of money?
We're in a sort of unique position, really, because we both work for the NHS. And so obviously, within the NHS framework, we've always contributed to the NHS pension scheme. And then when I was a junior doctor, actually straight after I qualified, there were quite a few guys trying to give us financial advice at that stage. So I had some financial products right from my early 20s, which then got reviewed when Rebecca and I got together. And then they were reviewed again after we got married. So we've planned, not really sort of strongly planning, but it's just sort of happened as we've gone along.
Okay, Steve. So in terms of the children then, what financial goals did you form? Were you sort of thinking about helping them onto the property ladder or maybe university fees? What were you kind of thinking?
So I think as we embarked on our planning, schooling was really important for us. So we wanted to find a way that we could enhance their education by using the private sector. Also, one of our main goals was to make sure that when they are adults, they have easy access to the property to buy a house. So we've made some plans around that by having a property that we're then going to split between the kids. So I think those were our two main goals with regard to the children. But really, I guess the whole thing is about trying to support your children as much as you can through whatever they want to do in life, and anything that we can, any financial products that we can use to maximize our opportunity to help them, that's what we've tried to do.
Okay, and those were, I suppose, some of the nearer term goals for your children. Did you also think about a little bit later on estate planning and sort of, you know, when you pass, that those kind of goals?
So we've both got a will. We haven't got any specific estate plans with regard to that. How are we going to manage that? I guess by the time we're no longer on the planet, it'll be for them to sort that out. But actually, you know, I know from experience when my parents died, there were some things that I wish that we had had in place that we didn't find out about it until it was actually too late to do anything about that. I guess, you know, you think about your own mortality, and that's always seems something in the future that actually I don't honestly think I've consciously thought about. But any, if we were able to plan for that, that would clearly be very helpful for our children.
And how did you go about sort of then developing a plan and thinking about investing? Was it something you sat down with Rebecca and sort of made a conscious decision about? How did that sort of form?
I think we have discussed what our goals are as the years have gone by. You know, we've been lucky that we've been in a position where we've had sufficient available capital to keep us sort of afloat on a day-to-day basis. And then as family circumstances have changed, when Rebecca's mother died, we were able to keep her house. And that's one of the things that we have planned to give that to the kids as they get older. So I don't think I could honestly say we've sat down and said, right, we must use this product, or we must, you know, this is something we should think about. It's something that as our circumstances have changed, things have evolved. But I don't know enough about financial products to say, well, this would be the best thing to do in this situation. So, you know, that's why I've always needed help and advice from professionals who are experts in those areas.
Rebecca, would you say it was similar to you? You kind of had this drip feeding of moments that suddenly made you think about your finances, be it, you know, your own or longer term or your children. Would you say that's kind of how you spent more time thinking about your finances?
Oh, absolutely. So my mother's house that I currently rent out, the money from that, it goes into premium bonds, and I'm sure that's probably not the best place for it. But at the moment, that's where it's going.
Okay, interesting. Felix, how typical is that? Would you say that's fairly true of, you know, a lot of investors' journeys, is that they suddenly get these moments where they're sort of forced to think about this a little bit more?
Yes, absolutely. And lots of investors, such as Rebecca and Steve, accumulate things that they didn't set out to accumulate, such as Rebecca's mother's house. I'm sure that wasn't a consideration historically, but, you know, as things changed, when the opportunity arose, it became a reality. So it's something they had to adapt to. So yes, investors usually set out with a plan, but there will be things that change that. And it's how you factor that into the plan to make sure you still get the right outcome.
And would you say children is a fairly typical one that suddenly triggers this realization that you need to do more when it comes to your finances?
Yes, absolutely. And things such as schooling is so personal to lots of people. So having a desire to have the best education is a really common goal. So things such as saving for private school fees, for university down the line, and then property. It's a very typical goal that parents will have for their children. And again, saving as early as you can really helps to minimize the amount you actually have to save, because investment returns will take care of the rest.
Okay, interesting. So, I mean, if you were going to describe the really typical goals there, I mean, we've talked about university, we talked about property. Is there anything else that you would sort of say is fairly typical with your clients?
Usually it's making sure the children are protected as well, if there were to be the early death of a parent. So there's usually some insurance products that are incorporated as well. So life insurance, critical illness, things like that. If one parent or both parents were unable to work for whatever reason, are the children going to suffer? Because that's a really big financial hit. So often that's something else that's, you know, lesser considered. Usually people go, okay, I've cleared the mortgage. That's fine, but it's usually not enough to cover the loss of one parent's earnings until while the children are financially dependent. So it's something else that needs to be considered, as well as the usual savings for things such as schools and property.
Now, we've all probably heard of ISAs, and we've heard of maybe private pensions like SIPs. Are there specific accounts and products that the government incentivizes for children?
Yes, so there is actually what is called a junior ISA. So it works in the exact same way as an adult ISA, the limit to contribute slightly less. But what you can do is put money into that as a parent, and the money will grow in a completely tax-free environment. When the child gets to the age of 18, they get full access to it. So it's a really good savings vehicle, particularly for university, as that hits when the child gets to 18. So there's the money available to fund that.
What about pensions?
Pensions for children is a controversial subject, I suppose, in the financial planning world, because there's such a long time frame. If you consider you're saving into a pension for a child that may be 5 years old, they realistically won't be able to access that until they're 60 plus, based on current legislation and the increase in pension access age and state pension age and so on. So is that really the best use of your capital? Yes, the child will have a nice pension pot by the time they're there, but could that money be more usefully employed for that child when they get to the age of 18, or young adulthood, when they're looking to buy a house or move or things like that?
But presumably 60 years of investment growth must be quite phenomenal to that small amount that you initially put in.
It should be phenomenal. But again, at age 60, that child has had their life. They've probably got their own retirement provision. And will they need access to such a big sum? Probably not. They want it for their children or their grandchildren. So that's why pensions for children, whilst they are a good idea in theory, if you've got lots and lots of money and absolutely maximise every other savings pot, probably something you don't need to consider.
And how important would you say is it for sort of parents to talk about this stuff quite openly and be really honest about, you know, how they're thinking about investing for their children and talking about this?
It's really important because you don't want to have a conflict in goals. If one parent is saving all they can for their children because they want them to have the best education possible, but the other wants to actually save with a different goal of perhaps helping them buy a property when they're settled in a job after university, those timescales conflict. So it's important that parents have a common goal, a common savings purpose for their children, because if you're going to have some conflict there, it can really scupper the plans and mean that you know, both goals are sort of worse off than they would be if you had a common goal and were working towards it together. So typically when clients save for their children, it's often the last thing that they want to consider with their capital, because obviously most parents have pensions themselves they have to contribute to, then all the bills of bringing up children and running a home. And so any sort of surplus after that is often a final thought, is where can I put it for my children? And lots of couples want to make sure they're maximizing what they do, but it's often a lower down financial priority as opposed to securing their own financial security, which I believe is important, rather than considering the children perhaps above themselves in that regard.
Okay, I'm going to get on to the sort of balance between your children and retirement in a little bit. First of all, Rebecca and Steve, I want to go back to you and just sort of go back to sort of thinking about how you plan for yourselves. You know, we've mentioned retirement there. Is this something that you've thought about a fair bit? Should we go to Rebecca for this one?
Again, I probably haven't thought about it as much as Steve. I have my NHS pension, but my pension isn't particularly good because I've had 2 years where I've been off on maternity leave, and for the last 16 years I've only worked part-time. So my pension is, well, I'm going to be very reliant on Steve's pension.
Right, okay. So Steve, do you want to tell us a little bit about your pension? Is this a defined benefit pension?
Actually, there are three parts to my pension. So the NHS pension, since I've been contributing, has changed from a final salary pension, which about two-thirds of my pension will be in. And then there is a lifetime average, which the last third will be in. So I've just been sort of contributing towards that for the last 30 years.
Felix.
And I'm just about to max that pension out. So after that, I'll have to come out of that pension scheme. And then I've also got a private pension, which I started again about 30 years ago, which has just been sort of chugging along. And that's obviously going to be form part of my lifetime allowance. Actually, I'm not entirely sure. I know what the final benefit is projected to be, but I have to say that I'm lucky that the job that I do has allowed it, just sort of my pension is just built up over the time that I've been working. I've just made sure I've been contributing to it. But I haven't actually, if you said to me, right, Steve, tell me, you know, what's your projection for when you retire? I don't actually know that yet.
Okay, that's interesting. Do you want to just explain the difference between sort of defined benefit final salary pensions and then defined contribution pensions?
Of course. So a defined benefit pension is where there is a defined pension at outset when you join. So typically with a final salary arrangement, as was the old 1995 NHS pension, your pension would depend on what your final salary was when you got to retirement. So it's not dependent on what you pay in or what your employer pays in. It is a promise from the employer to pay a set income for the life of the pensioner. It's changed slightly with career average earnings now. So the pension will be dependent on what you've earned across a career, and then it'll be a multiple of that. So say your average earnings are 50,000 and you work for 30 years, it may be, you know, a 30th of a preset figure that the NHS will have, and that would be your pension. So that's the difference. It's not dependent on what you pay in. Whereas a defined contribution scheme, the amount you have at retirement is dependent on what you pay in, what your employer pays in, and your investment growth over that time frame.
Okay, and is it fair to say that generally public sector pensions, you're going to find a lot more defined benefit pensions, whereas in the private sector, these are becoming rarer? Is that a fair thing to say?
That's a very fair thing to say. Nearly all of the public sector still has some form of defined benefit pension. And there are some exceptions, but generally that's what you get in the public sector. In the private sector, most companies have closed their defined benefit schemes as they're far too expensive for them to maintain. So they've closed them. And now the private sector generally has defined contribution.
Okay. And, you know, from what you're saying, it's sort of defined contribution, it's harder to sort of build up a bigger amount for retirement. So would you say it's fair then you should be thinking about this as early as possible because it's all about that time in the markets and allowing your saving to grow? Is that fair?
Absolutely. I mean, the longer you can invest, the less you need to save. So if, say, Steve had carried on saving each year the amount he was putting in, he'd have a much bigger pot from the investment growth element than just what he put in initially. So yes, starting as early as you can means that fundamentally you have to save a lot less of your own money because investment growth will provide most of the returns. Whereas if you start later, investment returns are going to be a smaller part and it's going to be mainly dependent on what you paid in.
Would you say there are benefits to using investment trusts in saving for your retirement?
Absolutely. Investment trusts are great vehicles. And just as a quick explainer as to what they are, investment trusts are companies that are set up and listed on the stock market. And those companies, rather than selling goods to you and I, like a supermarket might, those companies will invest in other companies on the stock market. And over time, the hope is that their fund grows, that feeds into their investment trust share price, and that grows too. The slight beauty of these compared to other investments is that you can get what's called a discount to the net asset value. So you can buy literally a pound of assets for less than a pound. And that provides you with some further protection from a risk perspective because you've got more assets than they cost in the first place. So that's a great feature of investment trusts.
Interesting. And I'm interested as well. Do you invest in investment trusts?
No, I don't. The investments that I have are some ISAs. We've got quite a big lump sum in the bank. We've got some property. And I've got quite a lot of money tied up in vintage cars and vintage racing cars. So that's along that sort of line of investments where we are.
Okay, and just based on what Steve has discussed with his pensions, are there any pointers that you can give him, Felix?
So I think Steve has a very diversified portfolio at the moment, having property, cars, cash and some ISAs. He needs to bear in mind that his strategy is slightly higher risk in some areas. I mean, vintage cars are highly illiquid. If the market were to fall out, suddenly you can't easily sell a vintage car. So is that something to bear in mind? Having a big cash sum, probably not the most wise thing to do at the moment when inflation is running as high as it is. So investing as much as you can, because typically stocks and shares do keep pace with inflation over time. So investing as much of that as you can into the stock market and just forgetting about it would be a wise move, I'd suggest.
And I just wanted to finally ask you, you know, this balancing act that parents will probably find between trying to provide for their children and also for themselves later on. I mean, what kind of pointers would you give towards how you know, the best way of going about balancing those two goals?
The best thing I would say is actually ensure that you're financially secure before you start thinking about your children. If you find that you're going to be worse off in retirement because you prioritize your children or things like that, that's not a good outcome. You need to make sure that you're financially secure firstly, because then you're in a much better scenario to help your children at a later date if they need it, rather than making sure your children have a big, nice lump sum to your detriment. So it could be you work longer or you don't have enough to meet your retirement needs. So the balancing act really is preference to your own savings goals first, and then think about the children after you're absolutely certain you're saving enough there.
Okay, I'm going to go back to Rebecca and Steve. Rebecca, do you have any tips for maybe those with young families who are thinking about their children, but also balancing that with their own financial futures?
Well, I think the most important thing is obviously you as the parents have to be financially secure before you start planning for your children. But failing that, I think just putting whatever you can away when you can has got to be the way forward.
Okay, and Steve?
I think, first of all, it's really good to communicate with your partner about what you are trying to achieve, because if you've both got different goals and different aims, prepare for the project to become completely derailed. And then you've got to look at, you know, what your earnings are, whether the targets that you're setting are realistic, not to overstretch yourself to start with, so you can keep those contributions and just keep plugging away at it, really. And, you know, get some advice from someone that you trust and follow that advice as much as you can.
Okay. Well, thank you so much to Rebecca, Steve and Felix for coming onto the podcast. I think we've probably given our listeners plenty to think about in terms of approaching the balance between family needs and those of your financial future. I'd like to thank Steve, Rebecca and Felix. It was great to speak to them today. And I think they've made clear that while, of course, it is natural to put the needs of our own children above our own, it's important to plan for retirement if you want to be comfortable and avoid passing a financial burden onto them. In the next and final episode, we're going to look at how to be prepared for the unexpected when life-changing events may impact your financial future in a potentially significant way. In the meantime, you can find further information on planning for your family's financial future by searching Janice Henderson's Biggest Investment or visiting janicehenderson.com/biggestinvestment. Until next time, goodbye.
Important information, not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the AIFMD disclosure document and annual report of the AIF before making any final investment decisions. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend on an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this podcast is intended to or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. We may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for regulatory record-keeping purposes. Issued in the UK by Janice Henderson Investors. Janice Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janice Henderson Investors International Limited. Registration number 359-4615. Janice Henderson Investors UK Limited. Registration number 906-355. Janice Henderson Fund Management UK Limited. Registration number 267-8531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited. Registration number 2606-646. Each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate, London EC2M3AE, and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. And Henderson Management S.A. Registration number B22848 at 2 Rue de Bitburg, L-1273, Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janice Henderson, Knowledge Shared, and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janice Henderson Group PLC, or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janice Henderson Group PLC. NAV. The total value of the fund's assets less its liabilities.